Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Fracking is on the rise across the country, and it's getting more media attention than ever. A recent McClatchy headline reads, Obama's position on fracking leaves both sides grumbling. The New York Times, fracking tests ties between California oil and ag interests. And Grist, oil and fracking chemicals spill into Colorado's floodwaters. Fracking in California, Colorado, Pennsylvania, Texas, and many other states is expanding with very little regulation. We're also seeing growing protests from the public over water contamination, earthquakes, and health problems. Environmental activist and documentary filmmaker Josh Fox has been instrumental in amplifying the voices of the people whose lives have been changed by the drilling boom. He's also exposed the powerful oil and gas industry lobbies and the lax regulation that has allowed for the drilling to expand across the country. The new documentary, Gasland 2, sheds light on the money and political power driving the gas rush in the U.S. According to the site Open Secrets, since 2008, the oil and gas industry has spent $780 million on lobbying. Democrats and Republicans are huge supporters of what they call the natural gas boom. Josh Fox is director of Gasland 2. His previous documentary, Gasland, was nominated for an Academy Award, and he joins us from Pennsylvania. Hi, Josh. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks. Great to be on.
Yeah, it's great to have you. So much has changed since you were last on the show talking about Gasland. I mean, it's kind of hard to keep up with what everyone calls this natural gas boom.
Well, I mean, it's an ever-expanding question. And as you know, I was just in Europe touring with Gasland 2, and I visited about 12 countries, about seven of which have an active movement to ban fracking. Mm. I've just been invited to Australia, where there's a similar type of movement happening. And, of course, in New York State and in California and Colorado, people are gathering together to ask the same, to demand the same thing, to ban fracking, because there's simply so much evidence here from so many different angles, whether it's water contamination, air pollution, public health and safety, fragmentation of communities, climate change, or what Gasland 2 focuses on, which I think of as the contamination of our democracy. And you pointed out that statistic from Open Secret. You know, I mean, there are similar studies done by Common Cause, and a great website called DirtyEnergyMoney.com, which tracks lobbying expenditures and really shows this incredible deep influence of oil and gas on our political system, which really sways the way our representatives vote and has outsized the citizen's voice within our democracy. And so there's so much going on about this. It was really challenging to make the second film because there were so many different topics to choose from, past this sort of initial shock and study of how it was affecting water supplies and air from the first film.
Yeah, and you go to the Gulf to talk to people who were affected by the BP oil disaster. What really struck you during the making of the second film? What did you learn after making this one that you didn't know when you made Gasland 1?
Well, you know, the first movie was a result of me being offered a gas lease in Pennsylvania, where I live, near the watershed for New York State, Philadelphia, and southern New Jersey, which is a beautiful area. I'm looking out over the woods and the streams and the things that contribute to safe drinking water going to 16 million people downstream from here. And so I wanted to just do a basic find out what was this like. You know, I've learned that fracking and drilling of this sort of unconventional wells, shale wells and other unconventional wells, was going on in 34 states. And in those 34 states, you know, people were starting to complain and have real issues. So the first film is this road movie that goes all across the U.S. and finds basically the same story everywhere I go, that there's water contamination, there's air pollution, there are these health problems that citizens are really imperiled, and that they're in a state where they feel that their human rights have been violated and taken away by multinational oil companies. The second film asks the question, well, if this is such a hot issue and it's going on all across the U.S., and we have thousands of cases of water contamination and multiple thousands of people who are really angry and upset and whose whole lives have been violated and in many cases destroyed by this industry, where's our government? Why aren't they doing anything about this? You mentioned the Gulf. I mean, this is when Gasland 1 came out, it was June 2010, so the Gulf spill was in the middle of, you know, its, you know, 78-day or whatever it was, spewing into the, you know, the oil into the Gulf. And I went down there right away just because I felt compelled. And what I discovered was that here was BP in charge of this catastrophe when they were the people who were to blame. And this was very confusing to me. And government officials down in Louisiana scratching their heads going, well, why is the company who's responsible here in, now in charge of calling the shots for the National Guard, for the media? And this opened up a really interesting question, just how much power do they have? Are they, in fact, in a position where, you know, they can over they have more influence than the government? And that's what something I wanted to investigate. And I found it's not just a question of the money. It's not just a question, you know, of these campaign contributions. As we all know, right now we're living in an era of unprecedented influence of big money from big corporations in politics. That's not a movie. You know, people know that. What I wanted to see was the process of what was happening within our regulatory agencies. And I found that at every level, state, local, and federal, there was such an influence on, for example, a state DEP, or what you have in every state, a DEQ, Department of Environmental Quality, Department of Environmental Protection, that there was a revolving door going on between the state regulators and the industry, which is to say the industry could hire the best state regulators, pay them 10 times the amount of money, that this was going to actually make people switch sides, investigations would fold under political pressure. And then what I found, which was really the most shocking thing in this new film, in 2012, when Obama comes out with a State of the Union address, which is largely accepted as the first campaign speech of the cycle, he goes out and advocates for natural gas development, quotes industry talking points, which have been discredited, which say that there's this much, there's 600,000 jobs and 100 years of gas. It's way, way less in both cases. And then you see overnight marquee investigations by the EPA and Lisa Jackson, who I believe was earnest in investigating this issue, fold and disappear. One in Wyoming, one in Texas, and another one in Pennsylvania. And that you watch as the science literally gets swept under the rug, some of it buried, disappear. And then you see that there's this moment of a policy shift, which at that point during the election was the scientific equivalent of making gravity go up instead of down. All of a sudden, you have EPA issuing statements that water is safe, which is clearly not safe from the scientific results. You see independent contractors brought in by EPA to investigate gas migration, people lighting their water on fire in Texas, disappear, being shelved. And this was really shocking, that in the middle of an election, investigations on the primary environmental issue, or one of the primary environmental issues nationwide, it concerns so many people, all of a sudden are tampered with and shelved. This was shocking, and it remains shocking to this day to me, and that's one of the things that is the stories that are told in the film.
Well, you open the film with quotes from politicians on both sides of the aisle basically saying the same exact thing about fracking. And the New York Times had a piece recently about what's happening between oil and agriculture interests in California, where fracking is really taking off. And Governor Jerry Brown has said increasing oil production could hand the state a, quote, fabulous economic opportunity, though he says he wants to learn more about the effects on the environment.
Well, California is in much the same position right now as New York State with respect to fracking was 4 or 5 years ago. And what we found in New York was that the more people, and Pennsylvania, by the way, the more people found out about fracking and did the research in New York, where there is no fracking, or had the actual experience in Pennsylvania, where there's lots of fracking, the more they found out about it, the less they liked about it. Mm-hmm. Right now in PA, you got almost two-thirds of people in support of a moratorium, which they never thought would happen. In New York, you've got a protest movement, an activist movement. Well, I shouldn't really characterize it as activist. It's really a citizens movement. I mean, these are not typical activists. These are people who are coming from places in upstate New York that you don't expect to have real serious political activity going on. It's atypical in terms of history. It's from coming not from the cities. It's coming from you know, the rural and suburban areas, where people are saying, no, we don't want this at all. And California is in the middle of making a big, big decision. When I was in Los Angeles, we toured up the coast of California. We're in L.A. and Monterey and Santa Barbara and San Francisco, Oakland. Launched with Food and Water Watch, Californians Against Fracking, which began with 100,000 signatures on a petition to ban fracking in the state of California. The reason why people are campaigning to ban it is because the regulatory regime is so weak. If you can imagine your typical state agency, for example, the DMV, you know how effective the DMV can be, taking on ExxonMobil, the largest corporation in the history of corporations, or one of the largest corporations in the history of corporations. You know, this is totally inadequate. So the response, because regulations don't seem to matter in the real questions that affect people, public health, safety, water contamination, air pollution, regulations, these guys just pay a fee like a parking ticket when they despoil your landscape and walk away. That's the regulatory weakness that we're seeing here, and in some cases don't even pay a fee. So citizens are coming together to ban it because the regulations don't seem to have an actual effect on the situation.
We're speaking with Josh Fox, director of Gasland Part 2. You may have seen Gasland. We had Josh on when that film came out. And we're talking about the fracking boom across the country. If you have questions or comments about fracking, it's exploding here in California. We finally got a state representative to come on the show about maybe 2 months ago. We didn't get that many questions answered, unfortunately, although we did find out that the water that's being used is, in fact, fresh water. We don't know what chemicals are being used because by law, they don't have to reveal the chemicals. So what questions do you have if you live near one of these wells? We'd love to hear from you. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. And Josh, let's just go over some of the basics here. Just to give us a refresher, can you just explain how fracking works?
Well, but before I do that, I want to just put it in context because I remembered this amazing thing that happened when I was in Monterey. A journalist was calling me and told me that 80% of the lettuce produced in the country comes from that area.
80%?
Or if I'm getting this wrong, I apologize, but it's a huge amount of lettuce.
That sounds about right, actually.
And that just felt to me like it's everyone who eats salad all of a sudden now in a competition for water and health and non-chemical salad with ExxonMobil. Or the oil and gas industry, and that this was really, when you just described the conflict between agriculture and oil and gas, please put that in context when I say what I'm about to say. Basically, what fracking is, when we talk about fracking, we talk about fracking in the vernacular, the entire process of this new unconventional oil and gas development. Basically, there are shale plays, which are a formation of rock under the ground. It can be very, very, very deep. It can be 8,000 feet. It can be 12,000 feet. It can be a little bit shallower. And the oil and gas, the drillers, drill down into that formation and then torque the well bore horizontally. So they actually drill down and then out, and they can drill out up to 2 miles into that formation and then inject down the well bore pipe 2 to 9 million gallons of water, laced with these toxic chemicals, which are fracking fluids, of which we know there are about 900, a large percentage of which are neurotoxins, carcinogens, things that are very, very bad for human health in very small quantities. That's injected into that layer of rock at such high pressure, pressures that rival cluster bombs. This is the sophistication of this technology. It's pulverizing this rock. And that fractures the rock, and it releases pockets of oil and gas that are trapped within this rock layer. Sandra Steingraber, the wonderful biologist, describes this as a frozen champagne pop of gas inside of this layer of rock. And doing that releases the gas and it produces oil or gas. What the consequences are is that you now have a connective layer between the surface and way down there. And way down there, there's lots of toxins. There's normally occurring radioactive material. There are volatile organic compounds. There are BTEX chemicals, benzene, toluene, ethylene, xylene. You have all the fracking chemicals that are involved in that mix at a particular location, and you're correct in saying that we don't have access to that information because they're exempt from the Safe Drinking Water Act. And importantly, what we found is that these wells are encased in cement. The cement goes around the pipe, and it's supposed to seal off oil and gas from coming up around the sides of this pipe, the well bore, and getting into the aquifers, but the cement cracks and breaks down at very, very high rates. The first, immediately upon drilling, about 5% of those cement barriers break and crack. And if anybody out there knows that does contracting or works with cement, you know how ornery and difficult cement is to work with and not get it to crack. And over a period of years, 30 years, 50% of those cement barriers fail, which means you now have a communication under pressure between oil and gas layers and our groundwater layers. In California and everywhere around the world, this is a huge problem because you have this real shortage of water. California is dependent on irrigation. You're talking about real water issues, especially going on in the future as we watch drought start to dry up a lot of these sources that Californians get water from. And it's a real problem with groundwater contamination, surface contamination, because you now have a heavy industrial carcinogen-dependent process in the middle of your ag production that's both competing for water resources. We've seen in Texas and Colorado, places where the oil and gas industry will buy all the water, and all of a sudden Texan farmers don't have the ability to farm or irrigate. You're setting this up in a place where it's entirely inappropriate to do this, not only because of agricultural production and water shortage, but also because we know now that fracking and the injection wells, which inject these enormous quantities of waste, because that 2 to 9 million gallons of water, about 50% of it will come back up and be really toxic waste, waste that's infused with oil and gas, sometimes normally occurring radioactive material, the fracking chemicals. That waste has to be dealt with in some way. A lot of it, some of it gets evaporated, some of it gets put into land farms, chilled into the ground. Others' uses is that it is injected back into the ground at a lower formation. Those injection wells and the fracking wells themselves are now being seen to cause earthquakes. In some cases, most of these cases are microquakes, very small earthquakes, but then they can be seen to trigger larger events. And in Arkansas, one town in Gasland, too, we had 1,000 earthquakes in about a year. One of them was a 4.7 that knocked people out of their chairs and put cracks in the local high school.
Well, and there are also scientific peer-reviewed studies coming out about this and just so much more data. So, for example, there was one study from Columbia University's Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory saying that a surge in energy production in the last decade has sparked what appears to be a rise in small to mid-sized earthquakes in the United States.
Yeah.
And then ProPublica has a piece in Scientific American called "Are Fracking Wastewater Wells Poisoning the Ground Beneath Our Feet?" They quoted engineer Mario Salazar, who worked for a quarter century as a technical expert with the EPA's underground injection program. And his quote, in 10 to 100 years, we are going to find out that most of our groundwater is polluted. A lot of people are going to get sick and a lot of people may die.
This ProPublica Scientific American article on wastewater injection wells, it's one of the most devastating pieces you'll ever read. I mean, it's overwhelming. I mean, when you think about all the chemical wastes that are produced and, you know, around the world, or around the country, that is, from all the different processes, whether it's pharmaceutical production or whatever, and a large quantity of that, obviously, is oil and gas waste, and the more you're fracking, the more you're going to create that waste that is being injected back into the ground. I mean, it's literally sweeping it under the carpet. And what we're learning and what the EPA is saying and that Scientific American article is saying is that there's natural migration of those fluids. They don't really stay put the way they were supposed to. And the wells themselves leak. So the leakage issues that I just described for oil and gas wells also are evident in the injection wells. So, I've seen pictures of these things in Ohio where you're literally bubbling toxic waste into a field and they're supposed to be stuffing it down into the ground. You know, we've got to start to come to grips with the fact that we are in the middle of an enormous degradation of the life support systems that allow us to eat food, to drink water, to live, to breathe, to be on the planet. And when you look at expanded fossil fuel production, and in California the numbers are staggering. You're talking about huge projected amounts of wells. I mean, you know, the Bakken Shale, if you've ever seen the oil boom in North Dakota, you look at this from space, there are flare stacks and fires coming out of that oil production field that are brighter. I mean, NASA scientists were looking at this from satellites and going, why is there a new city in North Dakota? Because these were the light from this rivaled the light from Minneapolis and from Chicago. You could see it from space. California is projected to have this Monterey Shale, much more oil than the Bakken Shale. You could be talking about hundreds of thousands of gas, oil and gas wells in California.
According to the New York Times, it says that the number of wells have risen by more than 50% since 2010. We've got a number of calls on the line, Josh, so let's take a few before we go to break. Let's hear from Kevin in Felton. Hi, Kevin. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks. I have a couple questions. perhaps the most important one is, Josh, in your opinion, has any state so far successfully regulated fracking in a way that doesn't allow the pollution of groundwater, et cetera, et cetera?
That's a really great question, and I would have to say no. I don't believe in regulation. It's not a matter of belief, though. When you're looking at regulating a process which the industry themselves is reporting has those kind of leakage rates. So this is industry science. They've studied the problem of oil and gas migration and leakage in their own wells because they were losing their product. They're losing their product into the atmosphere. They're losing it into the aquifers. So they studied these cement problems, and the best they can do, according to their own current reports, are those leakage rates that I mentioned. So no amount of regulation is going to make the physics operate better. You understand? When you're talking about regulation, again, you have to realize that these are huge, powerful interests that are able to pay the fees and despoil you and go home. I was just in France, actually. I was meeting with a winemaker in a shale-producing region whose vineyard had been in the family many, many years. He was a former ExxonMobil employee, and his father, who was a winemaker, was retiring. He told him to come home to France. He said, you know, it's not about whether or not they're going to pollute the groundwater. ExxonMobil has a calculation. If what they're going to lose in money when you sue them is less than the amount of money that they're going to pull out of the ground from oil and gas, they're just going to do it. It's a business calculation. So when you're talking about oil and gas regs, these are puny fines, scant enforcement. There is no ability to even enforce the regulations that are on the books right now, because there is no penalty for such a thing, penalties that aren't commensurate. So you're talking about despoiling groundwater for future generations, which, by the way, once you've done it, you can't get the contamination back out of the ground. It's very, very difficult, if not impossible, to clean up groundwater currently. So you're in a situation where regulations become permission, and they become a set of rules that are mandated by the state. The oil and gas industry says, okay, we've got to abide by these, and then they don't. And when they don't, there are very little penalties. And then you have the situation where rules, you know, it's like you can't make these wells behave soundly. And just as an example, the Society of Petroleum Engineers, the engineers who design these wells, they just came out with a PowerPoint slide that said of the 1.8 million oil and gas wells currently in the world, 35% of them are leaking. This was stunning. This was a leaked document. Mm-hmm. That they admitted it. So what you're seeing right now is really a movement from people to ban this activity. The best regulations, quote, in the country that exist in Pennsylvania, for example, we see leakage rates of between around 8% in the first 3 years of drilling. And you got 1,000 families coming forward to petition the DEP on water contamination. The other state that touts the best regulations in the country is Colorado. The floods that just happened in Colorado just caused probably 1,000 oil and gas spills because they're exempt from the stormwater runoff provisions of the Clean Water Act. So that's a federal regulation. Here we have huge walls of water moving through areas in Colorado that have tens of thousands of wells. Those gas wells are now underwater, and they're leaking, and it's a very, very serious situation.
We're speaking with Josh Fox about his latest documentary, Gasland 2, and we will continue taking your calls and emails about fracking right after this.
And I'm Matt Martin, general manager of KALW, here with Allie Budner, producer of Your Call, asking for your support at 800-525-9917 or KALW.org. And if you ask why, I think it's, you know, sometimes you hear people say, what difference does independent media make? And I think the story of Gasland, the work that Josh Fox has done, exemplifies the power of independent media to change the conversation, draw attention, empower citizens. Your support keeps that kind of media, those kind of voices, on the air.
And we wanted to bring Josh Fox back because on Your Call, we've been talking about fracking for quite a while. We've had many conversations about it. We've talked to farmers and ranchers whose livelihoods, their land's been affected, their health's been affected. We've talked to Josh Fox a few times about his work with Gasland. And And this is something, you know, it's really affecting people. It's changing day to day. And so we're following this here on Your Call. And if you support that kind of journalism, please call and pledge your support at 1-800-525-9917.
We do have Gasland 2 to offer you as our thanks for your contribution of $120. We have the DVD we can send to you at 800-525-9917 or KALW.org. Josh Fox really alerted us to what was going on in Pennsylvania and New York. And then here at Your Call, we said, what's happening here in California? We've been bringing forward voices from the people who work in the state regulatory offices to the activists on the ground, plus the voices of people in this area who are being affected by hydraulic fracturing. That is what happens here on KALW with your support. 800-525-9917, KALW.org. Get yourself the Gasland DVD. Keep the information flowing at any level. You'll be taking part in something really important and keeping this resource here for yourself and everyone else in the community. Thank you so much.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will be speaking with Guardian columnist Gary Young about his latest book, The Speech, the story behind Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s dream. We'll also be talking about what it will take and what it will sound like to have a real conversation about race in this country. And then on Thursday, we'll speak with Diane Ravitch. She's out with a new book about efforts to privatize education. We will be following the money behind the so-called reform organizations. But today we are talking about fracking, which is on the rise across the country. It's getting more media attention than ever. We've got a number of really good articles at yourcallradio.org. And we're joined today by environmental activist and documentary filmmaker Josh Fox. He is out with his latest documentary, Gasland 2, that sheds light on the money and political power driving the fracking boom in the United States. He's also been instrumental in amplifying the voices of the people whose lives have been changed by fracking. And if you'd like to join the conversation, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. And Josh, we were just talking about what's happening in Colorado, and Grist reports that this angle is not really getting much attention, just about the fact that the oil and gas wells are flooding.
Yeah.
I mean, what does this mean? What happens when we've got a flood and all these toxic chemicals?
Well, I mean, I would imagine it happens slightly differently in every case. The pictures that I've seen, you've got condensate tanks. You know, you have these big tanks on the sites that are gather oil and gas, you know, and they put it goes into a big tank, and then the tanker trucks come around and empty those. I've seen pictures where those are just knocked over. So you've got the condensate, which is this oil and gas product, you know, simply washing into the environment. On those sites, if they were fracking sites, you would have fracking chemicals, you'd have silica dust, you'd have all of these. And that was an active field. So you have things that are in production, which is to say that there's stuff on the surface that can be that are being spilled. And you have the sites that are containing those products that are coming up out of the ground, the oil. And those are washing in the environment. Some of them I see those tanks are underwater. So what you could have from this flash flood, this incredible flash flood that has happened, is 1,000 spills on that area. And what people are worried about is it making its way to the river? Is there reporting about this? I think it's an angle that a lot of people didn't think about. By the way, Katrina and Rita, the two hurricanes down in Louisiana, did the same thing. When you had the storm surge come up on the coasts, you had thousands and thousands of oil and gas wells that were contaminated sites that under normal conditions, that contamination might be located on the site or those chemicals housed on the site, and then all of that just gets washed in the environment and distributed. So, you know, this heavy chemical oil and gas activity is extremely dangerous when we're talking about it in a general sense, but when you factor in the extreme weather that's being, you know, that's coming with climate change, and there are a lot of reasons to suspect that a lot of the extreme weather in Colorado is not caused by climate change, definitely increased and made more severe by conditions that are coming from climate change. You're in an even more perilous situation. it's clear to me, and this is something that I wasn't paying any attention to 5 years ago when it wasn't in my backyard, when I, you know, I was doing other things, that the most important thing that we have to look at right now is how do we get off of fossil fuels? How do we stop production? How do we start to move our society in a direction of much cleaner and safer energy? And in California, I mean, you have these amazing programs to develop renewable energy, the million solar rooftops, the things that are pushing us in that direction. What we need, however, in face of these severe damage that is being is happening, is to accelerate that process. The good news is that solar and wind hydropower where appropriate. I'm not talking about new dams. I'm talking about, you know, micro hydro or where it already exists, can take care of our energy needs. We have a technical solution to the energy problem. We simply need the political will to move in that direction. And when you look at the devastation that happened in the Gulf, that it continues to this day with the chemical and oil and gas poisoning in the Gulf of Mexico, when you look at what's happening in Colorado right now, so tragic. I mean, these are places that I've been many, many, many times to think about all that oil and gas washing into those into that environment is extremely disturbing to me, more disturbing, you know, even in some cases than the flood itself, or, you know, as one of the more disturbing consequences of it. It's like we have to transition our society away from these fuels. And this is a conclusion that I feel has come just from 5 years of trying to explore this and trying to understand it and to see how it's influencing all these mechanisms that we participate in, whether it's our democracy or the environment that supports our life.
All right. Well, thank you again for calling in, Kevin. And we've got full lines. We'll have one open in just a few minutes at 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. We're speaking with Josh Fox about his latest documentary, Gasland 2. And let's hear from Peter in Watsonville. Hi, Peter. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I'm kind of concerned about the spate of ads coming through the BBC channel hosted by Robert Louis Stevenson School, where people are being invited by a website ending in .org to contact an organization to lease their fields for fracking. Right. And I'm wondering what your guest might think about that.
Where is this going on?
Oh, it's Robert Louis Stevenson School. I listen to the BBC on it because I'm a Londoner. Uh-huh. And I've noticed that every now and again, in fact, four or five times a day, they're running ads for for something that ends in .org. Hmm. And it's inviting people to monetize their fields.
Well, look, this is extremely disturbing to me. Every time I go on MSNBC, and which is a lot, actually, I'm bookended by ads from oil and gas. And when those segments are put up online, the banner ad is from Shell or Chevron or Exxon. And what's really disturbing and getting people really angry right now is NPR. NPR has taken money from the America's Natural Gas Alliance, and they're running that as their kind of nonprofit ad segment. Now, my understanding is that you kind of have to do this through a nonprofit for it to be legit for a public radio outlet. But, you know, our oil and gas industry's got for-profits, they've got nonprofits, they've got S-Corps, they've got, you know, LLCs, they've got every kind of possibility under the sun here. So, you know, it's been really angering to people that NPR has done that. And it wouldn't be surprising to me. Look, we're in a situation where you have pervasive advertising. You can't turn on the television in the United States of America without seeing ads from oil and gas. And I think right now in the UK, just to let you know, there has been a five-week standoff between protesters in a place called Balcombe, which has been visited by many luminaries, including, you know, Bianca Jagger and other folks, and they have been standing off the first couple of fracking wells in the UK and really igniting this question throughout Europe. You've got a big blockade happening in Poland. You've got you had 20,000 people march in the south of France. So I wouldn't be surprised if this is also being pushed on media outlets in Europe, although I did find it less pervasive in Europe in terms of the concentration and focus and barrage and pounding of ads from the oil and gas industry that I find in the United States. But it's really pervasive. You got to think about this as that there are thousands and thousands of the tentacles of the oil and gas PR machine promoting and pushing a message that this is good for us, that this is a good thing, when really what this is energy exploitation for the profit of multinational oil and gas companies that have a long history of contamination and human rights violations. the PR is there to persuade people that it's a good thing for them. And I think it's a testament to how difficult that sell is that they've been spending hundreds of millions of dollars on those ads.
So you are being invited to go on to national media outlets. Are you debating oil and gas executives, or what does that look like?
No, actually, very rarely do I ever get to a debate an oil and gas executive. I would love to. I think I'm doing it in London. The Financial Times World Energy Summit has invited me in October, and I'm going on a panel with Chevron. It's very, very rare that these guys will actually come out from behind the wall.
Mm-hmm.
They'll send out advocates. They'll send out, people who I think of as, PR people, or people who are, deliberately trying to attack the situation in a salacious way, like a Rush Limbaugh or a Glenn Beck. It was one week I got attacked by Glenn Beck and Grover Norquist in the same week. I thought that was a good week. I've done hundreds of media appearances in the national media, from The Daily Show to PBS to twice to Bill Maher. And, I've been very fortunate to be able to get this message out through the major media. The question is, what box am I inside of when you have oil and gas ads on either side of the appearances?
Well, thank you again for calling in. And let's go next to David in Berkeley. Hi, David.
Oh, morning. I'm wondering what, since so much of the fallacious exposures of the problem of groundwater pollution seems to be on the Internet, what kind of avenue is available for against people who embrace right-wing policy of corporation over public interest and believe that a lot of these groundwater intrusions are just a one-off? Because I've heard that from them.
Yeah.
They just say, "Oh, that's just a one-off,"
right.
and a recalcitrant way. I can only say, "Well, I know of a piece of property you can buy for cheap if you think that's it." And that's kind of a sycophant way of dealing with it, but are there ways of putting up pop-ups, for instance, so that people are enticed to click on the Internet? Because we get a lot of cookie avenue or activity.
Such a great question. The good news is this, that when it comes to the popular support, I really believe that the people who are against this activity are in a majority. Americans overwhelmingly support developing renewable energy. Those who know, more you know about fracking, the less you like it. And, so I have to believe that popular support is so much more important in our civilization than advertising dollars. You're going to see a lot of oil and gas people masquerading as real people on message boards, in chat rooms, on those kinds of things. There are people who are paid to do this, to pretend that they're real people and that they're actually working for the oil and gas industry, and they weigh in on these kind of questions. It's always just a one-off. Well, in Gasland 2, which is on HBO now, and I think it's on demand and on HBO Go, and it will be released on DVD in January, and on iTunes and Amazon, I think. It's very clear statistics. These are probabilities. These are events that are predictable. Science tells us how often these things are going to fail, and the real world is bearing out those results. You kind of can't argue with people who don't care about the reality or the reporting or the science. That's a problem. I mean, I think these people come into, all of us fall into three categories. We have sort of believers, who are, in my instance, for example, going to look at the fact that this was a Dick Cheney baby, this is Dick Cheney's project, and go, "Oh my God, I'm with you already." Those are your believers. Then there are skeptics who are in the middle, who are people who are going saying, "Well, show me the evidence, show me the science, show me the reporting." By and large, I think that's what's happening. I mean, if you ProPublica, New York Times, this radio program, my films, Washington Post, thousands and thousands of newspaper articles about these issues, and scientific studies about these issues. The skeptics will mostly be satisfied by that and go, "All right, well, this is the consensus." Then you have, in the last category, the deniers who have looked at the science, looked at the reporting, and just say, "Nah, I choose not to pay attention to reason and empiricism And usually those people are motivated by one form or another of capital, whether that's money or political capital. And this is something that, you know, I was talking with my brother in Los Angeles, and he pointed this out to me because I was really troubled by, in the same way that you are. And I said, this is a brilliant breakdown. Add to that, however, that in that third denier category are the merchants of doubt, the people who will go out there and create bogus science that will say things like, oh, it's a one-off. And what they're really trying to do is create that doubt in the middle category, because it shows that when we have doubt, when, you know, it doesn't matter how outrageous the thing that you're saying. A lot of the oil and gas people were coming out saying, oh, you can light water on fire naturally. This methane is naturally occurring. It's kind of absurd when you look at the actual peer-reviewed science. And you know, what it does, though, is it creates this cloud of doubt and this arena of doubt, which pacifies people and say, well, we don't have to act on this because the science isn't in yet, or we don't really know yet. This is a tactic and a strategy developed by the tobacco industry and their PR firm, Hill & Knowlton. And there's a direct line between Hill & Knowlton and the tobacco industry and the America's Natural Gas Alliance. They hired Hill & Knowlton as their PR firm in 2009, and we go into this in Gasland, too. So this is it can be a very frustrating debate when you're hearing these types of things, but, you know, we do have to root, hopefully, our discussion of these things in science and in reporting and in what people are saying on the ground, and hopefully that will have more penetration than these rather nefarious techniques of trying to confuse people and misinform them.
Thank you for calling, David. We're talking today with Josh Fox, director of Gasland 2. His last documentary, Gasland, was nominated for an Academy Award. And now I would like to welcome Adam Scow to the show. Adam is the California Campaign's director at Food and Water Watch. They've worked closely with Josh to raise awareness about fracking. Hi, Adam. Welcome back to the show.
Hello. Good to be here.
Great to have you. So, Adam, we wanted to bring you on to get a quick update about what's going on in California, because about a dozen bills have been introduced that would curtail various aspects of fracking, but environmentalists are not very happy with California Senate Bill 4. First off, can you tell us what is this bill and why are environmentalists angry about it, how it got watered down?
Yeah, the California legislature has been a story of the good, the bad, and the ugly for the most part, and it's recently been ugly, but there is some good news coming out of it. So SB 4 is a bill that creates a permit process to allow fracking to continue in California. At the last minute, some amendments were inserted, we think were brokered by the governor's office, that continue to allow the state agency that's supposed to protect us from fracking but doesn't. They're actually more interested in promoting oil and gas development. They're known as DOGGR, Division of Oil and Gas and Geothermal Resources. And the bill says it's up to DOGGR when to enforce the California Environmental Quality Act, CEQA, our basic environmental law. And if you look at the history of this agency, they've never, ever really enforced CEQA. Now, I don't want to create the impression that CEQA is going to protect us, because we know and Josh knows and you know that there's just no safe way to frack, period. So the bill was already a weak, bad bill because it did nothing to slow fracking down and nothing to make fracking any safer. So it went from a bad bill to an ugly bill in the last minute, and the legislature is saying, well, something's better than nothing, but in this case it really wasn't. So the bill is likely to be signed by the governor in the next week or so.
And where does the governor stand on all of this? He was quoted in the New York Times saying that fracking could hand California a, quote, fabulous economic opportunity, but said he wanted to know more about fracking's effect on the environment. What does that mean exactly?
Governor Brown is having to reconcile his big talk on fighting climate change with the enormous power of the oil industry in California. And we have a unique challenge here in California. I think our challenge is harder than New York because we are already an oil state. We do have Chevron here. We do have Occidental. And they have already been established in our politics in a deep way. They fund a lot of our politicians. They have spent over $2 million in the first two quarters of this legislative session. They gave the governor nearly $500,000 last year for Proposition 30. So we're up against a lot, but our movement is growing at a very rapid pace. So the governor is talking out of both sides of his mouth. He's saying, oh, yes, climate change is the biggest issue facing mankind. And then he goes and brokers a deal on this bad fracking bill. So we met him, a lot of our allies that with Californians Against Fracking met him last Friday in San Francisco. He was signing some sort of climate deal with China, saying climate change is the most important problem of our time. And we said, well, if you're serious about that, Governor Brown, you need to ban fracking in California. Otherwise, it's just talk. So what as Josh said, it's not about being right or wrong. It's about building a powerful movement that the most powerful movement that I've ever been a part of that's going to be need to be built to have a chance to deal with the power of the oil industry here in California.
And I have to say the Food and Water Watch is doing an amazing job of doing that all across the United States. It's really been an amazing thing to witness from, 5 years ago when I got this letter in the mail, being very, very isolated and feeling extremely alone, not knowing what to make of this, and watching sort of mom-and-pop organizations spring up all across New York and Pennsylvania, just citizens in their towns banding together to figure this all out and what the approach is going to be, to now Food and Water Watch really leading the charge nationally as a national organization to ban fracking, and seeing this incredible organization spring up. I mean, it's really an amazing test of democracy. I mean, Drew Hutton, the leader of the Greens and the Green Party, the founder of the Green Party in Australia, said, this is a test of whether or not our democracy is going to continue to function. And I believe that. The way I've been putting it lately is that I don't believe that we can continue to have democracy while we are dependent on fossil fuels. If we the continuance of democracy is really contingent upon our freedom from fossil fuels. And that I say that because I know the stakes and I see what's happening within our government. And it's shameful. It's a really shameful practice when state legislators will come together and do something very weak like a regulations bill and pretend this is some Band-Aid on this gaping wound. And the citizens are actively crying out, look, we don't want you to do this. Meanwhile, sitting in the halls of our state governments and our federal government, our powerful oil and gas lobbyists, powerful oil and gas interests, who are holding us back. Where I just was in Germany, they have created this incredible situation with solar power. They're getting 50% on certain days of their entire energy, electricity for the country from solar.
Wow.
Germany, is north of Canada. I mean, Munich is north of Montreal. This is not a sunny country. They don't have California desert. They don't have Arizona. Mm. And the way they did this was they broke up the utilities and they said, anyone can produce solar energy and the grid has to buy it.
Mm.
So you have 4 million independent producers of wind and solar in Germany who are just people who put up their panels, or big ones or small ones, and they're selling them to the grid. And this is democratized energy production, and it's remarkable to witness. And this kind of thing would be a huge boom in our economy, whether it's in California or in New York or anywhere in the United States. And this is what I'm talking about, because our ability to develop energy democratically is directly related to how our democracies are functioning. And if you're the governor of a state like Governor Brown, or you're governor of a state like Governor Cuomo, or the president of the United States, you have to believe in democracy, and you have to see that these forces are destroying the very foundation of what it means to protect our human and civil rights in the United States of America.
We actually should do a show on what other countries are doing and other states when you're talking about solutions. We have just 3 minutes left, and I have two really important questions I want to ask you before we end, for both of you. We're getting a comments about the Clean Water Act, and Faye says, why isn't President Obama being criticized for exempting fracking from the Clean Water Act? He's in his last term and doesn't give a damn about this, says Faye. It's ludicrous that there are more restrictions on the corner gas station than there are on oil and gas. Do you think that he's getting enough criticism from environmental groups, Josh?
No, I don't think he is. But first of all, let's be clear. The Safe Drinking Water Act and the Clean Water Act are two different acts. The Clean Air Act, there are exemptions, Superfund Act. These are all huge pillars of environmental law in America. Oil and gas industry is exempt in many ways from most of those provisions or the entirety of them as it pertains to this development. Those were acts of Congress. We take an act of Congress to overturn those things. However, the president should be out there campaigning. We, through Food and Water Watch and Credo and Move On and many other organizations, helped with a petition against fracking on federal lands, our public lands, our public trust. This land is your land. These are the places throughout America that belong to the public, and they wanted to create rules on, I think it's nearly three-quarters of a billion acres of our lands, to open them up for oil and gas with new rules and regulations. Through that, we had 650,000 citizens sign on to ask for a ban on fracking on public lands, and over a million comments altogether, which were critical. Did this story get any reporting? Did we find out that 650,000 citizens, in a very short period of time, about a month or so, signed up to want fracking on public lands? Did we hear about that in the media? Did Obama get any pressure about it? Has he gotten pressure from clear, this administration switching policy in midstream and not paying attention to their own science that EPA was coming out? No, of course not. But it is the media that has to report these stories, but it's the citizens that have to continue to insist that even our Democratic governors, Governor Brown, Governor Cuomo, and our President Barack Obama, have to be held accountable when they kowtow to oil and gas interests against the will of the people and causing a situation of human rights degradation and violation in the United States of America.
Well, and we'll continue to follow the bills in California and across the country. I also, Josh, next time you come on, I really want to talk about the movements that are happening across the country, because one Texas representative told you that this is really affecting mostly the white middle class. And so that's what's really interesting about this, is people that, like you said, are not really activists, but they're really getting involved in standing up to fracking.
Well, I think it affects everybody. I think what he was saying was that it's unusual that it's not third world developing country issues.
Right. Right.
That now we've exhibited the exploitation of those developing nations that we've exploited as American companies, not we, but those American companies have exploited for decades, is now being visited on people who are not used to having that country.
Josh Fox is director of Gasland 2, and Adam Scow is California Campaign's director at Food and Water Watch. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. Thanks for listening.
And you have been listening to Your Call on KALW. I'm Matt Martin, General Manager of Local Public Radio, joining Rose here in the studio, asking for your support after this amazing hour, following up on these issues of hydraulic fracturing here in California, across the country, and also around the world. That's what Josh Fox does in his work. His new film, Gasland 2, is ours as our thank you gift to you for a $120 contribution to KALW here in this membership campaign that we are wrapping up on Thursday evening at 6 p.m. So now is a great time to show your support. And Rose, I apologize. We have such short breaks during this membership campaign because we're keeping the programming intact that I forgot to mention that we have a challenge in front of us. Two generous listeners, and those are Bud Alderson in San Rafael and Marsha Wachna in San Mateo, have put forward $750 to challenge their fellow listeners to support KALW in this hour. We need 20 people to have called or clicked during this hour if we are going to redeem that challenge, make it there, and get that additional $750. Right now, we are at 13. There's been great response, but your call will make a difference.
Thank you so much. 800-525-9917. I've been on the air since 6 a.m., and it's been such a great morning. Thank you to everyone who has contributed to KALW. You can also go online, kalw.org. I watched the film yesterday. You will want to share this with everyone, especially friends and family who might not know about this. I showed my mom Gasland. She said, "Why isn't this leading every newscast?" 800-525-9917. We have followed fracking for years, and we will continue to follow what's going on at the state level and the federal level. Support this kind of independent radio that takes an hour to take your questions. And we do our homework. We come to the table with a lot of these reports, so we make sure we have the scientific information. 800-525-9917 or online, KALW. $120, we'll send you the film. And if we can get 20 calls or clicks in the next couple minutes, we'll get an extra $750. 800-525-9917 or KALW.org.
800-525-9917 or KALW.org. We are having so many people come forward. New members like Christina Gonzalez in San Francisco, Lauren Patterson in Oakland, both of whom went to KALW.org during this hour. Also Gene Player in San Francisco, Judith Feiner also here in the city. And we got a message from a listener who went online to give a gift. He said, "It's been tougher for me financially than I ever imagined it would be, but I've come to really distinguish what makes a difference. I can't offer much, but I want to express the sincerity with which I value your programming. Thank you for making that decision." That is what this is about. Each person doing what they can to keep this media ecosystem that we got here strong. 800-525-9917 here on KLW, San Francisco. And I do want to thank everyone who's been calling or clicking. We have one more minute. before we're going to go to the BBC in London. So we are asking for your support, this opportunity to get the DVD, Gasland 2, yours for a $120 contribution, and also to make an extra impact in one of these last days of our membership campaign to help us make it to this challenge.
800-525-9917. I see all of our volunteers are on the phone, so thank you so much for calling. You can also go online, kalw.org. We never sell or share your personal information. $120 will send you Gasland 2, and you can push us toward our goal. As Matt said, we're ending Thursday at 6 p.m. At 20 calls or clicks, we'll get an extra $750, which goes far on KALW. KALW.org, 800-525-9917.
Or KALW.org. Thanks so much.